was perfectly fine by me. Chapter 15. After a good night's rest, the summer holiday arrived. I woke Braden an hour after dawn. He groaned, but the train left early, and though we had time before it departed, I didn't want to risk missing the carriages shuttling students from the school and having to wait for one to come back. We dressed in a hurry and groomed ourselves as fast as was hygienic. Once we were done, we made our way out of the dorm into the women's dorm hall next to us. Students were bustling among both of them, as eager as we were to leave the academy for holiday. It was after dawn, but the sun had yet to peek over the walls of the enclave and the school, so we were bathed in the cool shadows of the early morning. We got a few looks as we strolled through the halls of the women's dorm, but no one stopped us. It wasn't as if men weren't allowed. As we carried our luggage, I hoped that Layla was ready to go. I'd told her when to be ready, but at the same time, it was a holiday. I wouldn't be too surprised if she were sleeping in. I knocked rapidly on her door when we arrived. We waited several seconds, but no one answered, so I knocked again impatiently. Finally, after more than half a minute, footsteps approached, the lock unbolted, and the door cracked open. It wasn't Layla standing there, though. It was her roommate, Fiona. Her eyes were like narrow slits, as if she wasn't fully awake. She clutched at the opening of her beige silk robe, keeping it close, but clumsily revealing a bit of cleavage. The robe hugged her form very well. She noticed my staring, blushed, and wrapped her arms tighter around herself.
"It's so early," she croaked. "What do you want, Griff?"
"Well, we were..." My voice trailed off as I tried to concentrate on the moment instead of the pretty girl in front of me.
Is Layla still sleeping?"
She blinked the sleep from her eyes and yawned.
"She sure is."
I groaned.
"I'm sorry to wake you, Fiona. Mind if we come in and wake her? We're about to head out, and, well, she's supposed to be coming with us."
"Fine. Make it quick," she said with a sigh.
She opened the door wider and let us in. I crossed the room to Layla's bed where she was sprawled out in her sheets in her cotton nightgown. Without missing a beat, I leaned over her and shook her shoulder gently.
"Hey, Layla, I need you to wake up now."
She groaned and rolled onto her back. After a long moment, she cracked open her eyes and smiled at me.
"Oh, hey, you,"
Layla said with a whimsical sigh. She grabbed my face and pulled me down to her and kissed me on the lips.
"Mmm."
It was obvious that she was still half asleep. Of course she was. Braden cleared his throat behind me. I sighed with a grin.
"As much as I enjoyed that, I really need you to wake up, Bethel."
"No,"
she sleepily moaned.
"Layla."
"Ugh. Okay, you brute."
Finally, she sat up and rubbed her eyes. I crossed my arms and grinned.
"We told you to wake up early."
Layla pouted cutely, I had to admit.
"This is early."
I threw my hands up and then slapped my palm to my forehead.
"Make her help me," I whispered.
"Okay, Layla, just get dressed and hurry up, please. We don't want to miss the carriages." She nodded as she stretched out her arms.
"Got it. Now get out and let me change."
Braden and I both snorted. Braden couldn't get out the door quick enough. As I followed him out, I called to Fiona.
"Sorry about the trouble, Fiona. Have a good holiday."
"Uh-huh,"
she answered, which was muffled, since she had since stuffed her face back into her pillow. I snickered and closed the door. Thankfully, Layla was prompt with her dressing and was out of the room in only a couple of minutes. She didn't offer an apology and simply strode out and marched down the hall. I rolled my eyes and followed, and Braden snickered as he trailed along behind me. It would be all fun and games for now, until we missed the carriage and the train, and would have to wait for a long time to catch the next ones. Layla wasn't patient, so that would be bad. A crowd of students waited out in front of the main building. I estimated close to 24 of them all trying to get in the train of carriages that waited to pick them up. My heart sank. This was not going to be easy. For one, several of the carriages were far nicer than the standard city carriages, with lacquered wood paneling and polished gold trim,
some even emblazoned with house sigils. These were not for us commoners. They belonged to the wealthiest students. "This," I began while gesturing to the crowd, "this is why we needed to be up early." Layla's answer to that was to stick out her tongue at me. We had to wait more than half an hour before we could muscle our way into a carriage. The carriages for the noble and wealthy students were generally larger, but only ever seemed to carry one or two students and a pile of luggage, even though it could have fit half a dozen or more easily. It made progress slow, but we finally got a carriage. We piled in, along with a couple of other students that weren't in our class. One was a tall stick of a man, with tanned skin and startling gray eyes that complemented his skin and bright sunset hair and beard. I didn't recognize him, though. His companion was a woman, also tall, and rather well-built. She had a pretty face, small lips, a small nose, and very pleasant green eyes. I'd seen her a few times in the dining hall, a water mage, if I recalled correctly. We sat tightly packed in our seats, Braden and I against the doors, with Layla in the middle. Some of our luggage was packed away in the travel compartments, and the rest was wedged at our feet. The driver opened his little sliding panel and leaned down to speak through it.
"Where to, young masters?" he asked.
He had a jovial tone, and between that and his obvious laugh lines, he seemed to be a generally happy guy. "Central Station for the three of us," I replied. I eyed our traveling companion seated across from us in the cab. "You going there too?" The man nodded.
"Yep."
He had a low voice like a bass instrument.
"You heard him,"
I relayed to the driver. "And try to be as fast as you can be without running over anyone." The driver chuckled.
"I'll do my best, sir."
Then, blessedly, we were off. And the driver didn't put us at a fast pace. The train was set to depart at the 8th hour, and the 7 bells of the 7th had just rung while we'd loaded our luggage into the carriage. With all the traffic of the summer holiday that I was sure was going around, we would be cutting it very close. As the carriage started rolling, I turned my attention to the other students with us. I gave them a smile and extended my hand to the man. "Hey there, I'm Griff." He gave my hand a look, took it in a firm and calloused grip, and shook once.
"I know who you are, Summoner. That was good work you did in the Dance of Wheels against that flame mage. Masterful work, truly."
"Oh yeah, thanks," I said with a smile as I scratched my head at the sudden flattery. "And you are?"
"Apologies."
He placed his hand over his heart, closed his eyes, and inclined his head.
"Solomon Vavo. A pleasure. I'm a second-year augmenter."
He opened his eyes and smirked. "Pleased to meet you," I said. "I don't think I've ever met an augmenter before." Augmenters channeled the magic from essence crystals to manipulate their bodies in ways to bulk up their muscles, give them enhanced speed, and so forth. They were very sought after both in the military and civilian life, though they were exceedingly rare. I shifted my focus to his female companion. She bristled under my gaze, a slight blush crawling upon her cheeks.
"I'm Amaya. Amaya Shinwick," she said. "I'm in the same class as him. Water mage myself."
We shook hands while exchanging smiles. So my memory had been correct. She was a water mage. She looked at me with wide, bright eyes, as if she was starstruck. I guess I was rather famous around the school now, though I hadn't seen too many people look at me as she did. I could definitely get used to the attention. After introductions between them and my friends were given, silence fell over us. Amaya and I had the same idea and pulled out a book to read. Mine was The Complete Beginner's Guide to Loot Economics. I had the feeling it would come in handy someday. Layla tried to catch some sleep by leaning her head against me while Braden simply watched out the window. Solomon pulled out a sketchbook and started to draw with a stick of charcoal, though what he was drawing, I couldn't tell. Regardless, we were all happy to stay quiet for the journey. We made good time, or at least it seemed like we did. When we finally arrived at the train station, the 8-hour bells hadn't rung yet, but they could any minute now. We divided the fee amongst the 5 of us and thanked the driver after we unloaded our luggage. We jogged with our things toward the nearest lift and crammed on it with a crowd of other people. It was a tight fit and uncomfortable, but the stairs would have been a mighty big pain in the ass. As the lift came to a halt at the top,
The eighth hour bells began to chime. Layla cursed with a chuckle.
Better hurry,
I chimed. Solomon and Amaya veered off from us and made for the northbound train to Hartmire.
It was nice meeting you,
they called and waved.
You too,
I yelled back. My friends and I scampered swiftly across the platform to our train. Our train, the southbound train heading to Garvish, whistled its horn. I cursed. We ran with all we were worth, which wasn't a lot thanks to our bags. We made it to the train, right before it started to pull out of the station. A soldier in a crisp green uniform and a rifle slung over his shoulders stood at the doors to the train. He frowned at us as we approached and put a hand out to stop us.
Hold!
He ordered.
This train is not for civilian use. Authorized for military use only.
We skidded to a halt and groaned at this delay. We're academy students, I told him with a frown. I dug into my bags and produced my papers and school identification. The soldier took them a tad too aggressively, and as his eyes scanned the information, he grumbled and cleared his throat.
So it seems.
He handed my papers back to me, and I stuffed them back into place. His eyes drifted from me to my friends.
I'll need to see yours too, of course.
Of course they did so in short order, and after that was squared away, we were allowed on the train. Moments later, the horn blared again, and the train lurched forward. Layla nearly fell from the sudden jerk of the train, but I caught her. We barely made it, I told them as I helped Layla to stand back up. She patted herself down.
See? We were fine.
Brayden scoffed.
I could have done without all the stress.
I needed my beauty rest, boys.
Layla joked with a grin. Of course, I remarked sarcastically with a shake of my head. Layla simply chuckled and moved past me down the aisle to find our seats. This train was more basic than the one I'd taken here originally with Arwen and Headmaster Sleet. It didn't have any private booths to sit in, just rows of seats. Each row was four seats, two facing forward and two facing back. Most of the seats were filled by soldiers and officials. I knew that many in the military went on holiday leave during this break, so I assumed they were all headed to their respective homes. We eventually found a row of empty seats toward the back of the car, which was fortunate because I didn't want to cross to another car at the speed the train was going. I was sure it was safe, but it was still more risk than I wanted to experience on my holiday trip. We stowed our bags in the overhead storage compartments and took our seats. Layla sat against the window and pressed her hands and face to it. I sat next to her, and Brayden nearly took up the two whole seats across from Layla and me. As the train picked up speed and the cityscape blurred by even faster, Layla's eyes seemed to grow wider. Never been on a train before? I asked her.
Nope,
she replied without taking her eyes off the passing buildings. I could see the reflection of her large eyes in the window. They darted about at every movement.
I've actually never been outside the Enclave, or even seen the outside of it.
Brayden perked up and furrowed his brows.
How is that possible?
His tone came off a bit too judgmental. Her head snapped from the window to him.
Sorry, not all of us have several mansions in different enclaves.
She turned her attention back to the window. I smirked to myself. If she thought Brayden had a lot, she would have lost it hearing that Nia's family literally had over a dozen residences, as I had. But that didn't need to be said right now. Layla sighed.
People in the slums can't just leave. Most of us are in too much debt. Sure, the work in the wilds is honest and pays well, but no one wants to risk leaving the protection of the walls.
I leaned my head back against the cool leather of the seat.
Honestly, it's not that dangerous. Yeah, there are bandits and monsters, but in 20 years, I've only dealt with monsters twice and bandits once.
Of course, both of those instances were rather life-changing for me.
Yeah, that sounds like too many to me,
Brayden added.
Exactly,
Layla chimed in. I shrugged.
You have to weigh the pros and cons of living out there.
I think the benefits of it seal the deal for me. Layla puffed out her breath against the window, fogging it.
And what would those benefits be?
I crossed my arms and thought about it.
Well, for starters, the honest and well-paying work you mentioned. I always loved going from town to town with Maelor and helping people with whatever menial labor they may have needed.
That's not a great motivating pro for me,
Brayden mused from his seat, where he'd laid across the whole seat, his back to the window. I'm not finished, smart guy, I smiled, and thought over a lifetime of memories in the wilds. The air is fresh, truly fresh, not like the smog and smell of the enclaves. Everything is wide open, peaceful. You have room to breathe. The sky has no light pollution, and the views at night are second to none. Layla sighed.
That does sound amazing, actually.
Yeah, Brayden added as he had his eyes closed now. I nodded and smiled. It is amazing. Then there are the people. They're good, hard-working, strong and hardy, always willing to lend a hand, always smiling, even in the hardest and darkest of times. They don't quit.
That's a hell of a sales pitch, Griff, Layla said.
Yes, I said with a laugh. I suppose it is, but I mean every single word of it. We descended into silence after that, and eventually I slipped snuggly deeper into my seat and drifted off to a nice mid-morning nap. The blaring of the train's horn awoke me. I started with a groan and rubbed my eyes. The train had decelerated as we approached the nearest town. As my eyes adjusted to the now very bright sunlight, I could make out our surroundings. Out our window was open fields of wheat and corn and other crops, with smatterings of forest every now and then. Out the window on the other side of the aisle were wooded hills sitting on the far banks of the river that the tracks had been erected next to. That was the Whitebriar River, which wound all the way from the mountains up near Hartmire, skirted around Varley, and went well south past Garvish. If the train was slowing for a nearby town, that meant we were at Barracks Crossing, our stop. I couldn't see it ahead of us outside of the window, though. When Layla heard me stir, she left her vigil of the window and turned to me with a smile.
Have a good nap?
I stretched. Sure did. Have you been staring out the window this whole time? She nodded vigorously.
Sure did.
She kept muttering about the scenery, Brayden said across from me.
He was practically sprawled out over his seat, but as the train started to grind to a halt, he adjusted into a proper sitting position.
That was fun.
Layla finally unglued herself from the window and put her boots back on, which she must have removed while I was asleep.
The conductor announced that this is Barracks Crossing, she said as she did up the laces. This is where we get off, right?
Yes, it is,
I said as I powered through a yawn.
Good, because I'm starving, Brayden added quickly.
His stomach rumbled then to give some added emphasis on the matter. Layla and I both laughed.
When aren't you hungry? I teased.
He smiled.
Almost never.
We skipped breakfast, though, so I could eat too.
Layla patted her stomach. Agreed, I said with a nod. We gathered our things and quickly departed the train when it pulled into the station. The station and tracks, due to their proximity to the river, were raised several stories above the town proper, so we got a good view as we stepped to the wrought iron fence that penned in the platform. Barracks Crossing was a bustling port with large red brick buildings that towered over the streets, for they were built upon large stone columns in case of the seasonal river flooding. The buildings across the town were shallow gabled and roofed with copper sheet metal, all of it glinting in the sun. The cobblestone streets were littered with people going to and from the port, some carrying goods to and from. A low gray stone wall ringed the town, more decorative than anything.
Pretty,
Layla mused as she leaned over the railing. I nodded in agreement, though she and Brayden didn't see the gesture. I pumped out my chest with pride. Welcome to the wilds, my friends. Chapter 16. We descended the stairs of the train platform to the street below. The cobblestone road was clean and wide, and there were plenty of room for carriages, horses, and walking pedestrians alike. True to my word, the wilds were more open, and I for one was glad to be out of the claustrophobic confines of the walled enclave. It was midday, so the town was busy with the heights of the lunch hour rush. There were stands all along the road with farmers showing off their yields. Fruits, vegetables, meats, fish, baked goods, everything could be had. There were cafes and restaurants too, so my friends and I had a wide selection of delicious options to choose from. We passed through the main market, a huge open square with a bell tower at its center, a common feature of the larger towns of the wilds.
This was where the main loot trading took place. While there were shops all over, brick-and-mortar establishments, the majority of the square was taken up by a labyrinth of merchant stands and stalls that sold all manner of monster remains and loot. I spied scales, claws, teeth, eyes, horns, fur, vials of blood, bones, and everything else that could be taken off a monster, haggled over in those stalls. Of course, there were stands for essence crystals, by far the busiest ones. The largest, a huge stand with a large blue tent top, had at least a dozen men and women inspecting the crystals and asking the merchant and his workers questions. I was sure there were probably some interesting and powerful monsters that I could buy, but I didn't have unlimited funds for this trip, so I decided to conserve my money. Layla whistled at the bustle of the market.
"This is a mess,"
she said as her head swiveled around to take it all in. "Yeah, this is pretty much how all the largest towns in the wilds operate," I explained. "They're hubs of trade, especially the ones like this one on rivers and on the rails."
"Would Tallington be like this too?" Braden asked.
I shook my head. "No, it's a small town. Now let's grab that food. I'm starved." Braden and Layla were hungry as well, so we made our way through to the other side of the market, where a comfy-looking tavern with an open-air balcony beckoned us in, with the smell of baked bread and fried fish. Sure enough, there was a blackboard sign out front that read, "Lunch Special. Fresh cooked salmon caught this morning," written in chalk. I thumbed at the sign. "You two okay with salmon?" Braden moaned and rubbed his stomach with both his hands.
"I love salmon, Griff."
I chuckled. "Good to hear it. And you, Miss Bethel?"
"I'll eat anything at this point,"
she readily admitted. "Then it's settled," I declared, and marched us into the tavern. We took one of the tables on the balcony and ordered some cider and cooked salmon. Layla and I had half a fish each, while Braden chewed down on a whole one. Thankfully, he was paying for himself, and his allowance was a tad more than what Layla or I had. As for the food itself, the salmon was delightful, and the cider was sweet, just like honey. As we ate, I pulled out the map of the wilds I'd bought years ago and studied it briefly. "So," I started, "if we follow the road west out of town, we should get to Tallington in 2 to 3 days. Maybe more if we get some bad weather."
"And what if we run into bandits?"
Layla asked, without a hint of worry at the question, as if she were merely asking about the weather. I leaned back and crossed my arms. "Well, that depends."
"On what?"
asked Braden. "Depends on if we see them first or if they see us first. If they catch us off guard, well, let's just say we might be in for a delay." Layla swallowed and downed some cider.
"Sounds fun."
"Where will we sleep?"
Braden asked through a full mouth. I always found it odd how bad his table manners were sometimes, despite his noble upbringing. Maybe he did it out of spite. "There are a few towns along the way that should have some inns," I shrugged nonchalantly as I refolded the map to put it away. "Worst comes to worst, we'll camp out at night." I could tell Braden wasn't fond of that suggestion, but he didn't offer a complaint. Besides, we'd most likely find inns. Probably. After we finished and paid for our meal, we headed west to the edge of town. There was a stable there with a wide selection of horses for us to rent. The deposit was steep, but the owners needed collateral in case we stole the horses and never returned. But once we returned, we'd get half of our payment, so long as the horses were fine. Now I was glad I hadn't bought anything in the market. The horses weren't wild about us riding them, though, not with the essence crystals we had with us that riled them up. Layla and Braden each had a few, while I had most of my stock. I never went anywhere without them. Eventually, though, they were able to calm them down with the stable hand's help, so we could mount up. Since I wasn't used to it, I struggled up into my saddle, but eventually managed it. My horse, a beautiful brown roan named Cass, whinnied with what I perceived as frustration at my sloppy mounting. Layla tried desperately to mount her own white and brown mare, but she couldn't manage to hook her leg over the back of the horse, so Braden had to pick her up around the waist and plant her onto the back of it. She crossed her arms and pouted, embarrassed, as he did so. That made Braden and I laugh. As they settled down into the saddle, I sighed. "I can't wait to surprise Maelor. I'm so excited to see him." Layla whipped around from where she sat.
"Wait, He doesn't know you're coming?
Nope. I forgot to ride him back, I said as I shook my head. Brayden effortlessly mounted his horse, a large black monster that was nearly as thick as an ox.
How do you know he's still there, then? You two traveled around a lot, didn't you?
We did, but no need to worry, I smiled. Maelor said in his letter that he'd be there for a few months, so he still should be there.
Okay, good,
Layla responded quickly.
I wouldn't want to waste this trip.
I shrugged. Even if he's gone, we're still going to have a good old time. It's all about the journey, and not the destination, ain't it? Layla smiled and snorted.
That's true.
I'm just glad to be with you, too,
Brayden chimed with a whimsical smile. I think he was just happy that he was able to eat a whole salmon.
Aw, that's sweet, Flint,
Layla snickered.
Agreed,
I said. I took in a deep breath and let it out in a full, smiling sigh.
Okay, let's get to it, shall we?
We traveled the roads to Tollington for 2 days and nights, taking in the beauty of the countryside as we went. Beyond the scenery, our days weren't too exciting, mostly us telling stories and jokes as we rode. Brayden sometimes sang, which came as a surprise to both Layla and me, for he'd never volunteered that information to us at the academy. His speaking voice was low, but he had a surprising singing range. So our days were enjoyable, if not mundane. But our nights were fun. The first night we stopped in a small little hamlet called Valya, a cute name for a cute little collection of wooden homes with thatched roofs. Valya was home to a stone inn called the Bed of Flowers Inn. Their quirk was that all the bedrooms were decorated with a wild assortment of wild blooms picked from the nearby fields. It was aesthetically pleasing, and the rooms smelled nice, so I guess it worked. What we did that night, however, was far from the type of dainty atmosphere the inn gave off. Layla and I challenged a troop of 4 mercenaries to a drinking contest. I lost, but I had 15 shots, and my challenger bested me by mere seconds of consciousness. It was a hell of a time. Even Brayden got drunk and serenaded the inn. The next night, we stayed at a solitary inn on the side of the road. Just an inn, not a hamlet or anything around. It was a tall, ornate wood and stucco structure with red tiled shingles and windows made of thick bluish glass. It was called the Tipsy Wizard, which would have been a much more appropriate name the previous night. This night, Brayden was the Tipsy Wizard, and challenged all the other half-dozen patrons to an arm-wrestling contest. He defeated everyone, including a lumberjack that was as big as him. Their war of arms lasted a solid 10 minutes, and was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. At least, that's what my alcohol-addled mind believed. And nevertheless, it was an incredible display of strength and willpower. In the end, Brayden was victorious, and everyone again drank. And to top it off, as Layla and I left to retire to our room and entertain each other in bed, I spied Brayden sneak off with the bartender, a thin, gorgeous girl with blue eyes and a tall head of blonde hair. So it was a successful night, and thus our journey and holiday started with a ton of fun, and we hadn't even made it to Tollington yet. It was around midday of our third day on the road that our destination finally came into view. As we passed a couple of windmills and some wheat fields, golden in the sunlight, we spotted Tollington. The town was situated at the edge of a large expanse of forest that stretched for miles along the horizon. The town itself was a collection of a few dozen wood and stone buildings, no more than a story tall each. It was a quaint little place. The town was buzzing with peaceful life. We rode past farmers working their fields and a rancher herding a slew of cows into a pen on the edge of town. I heard the ring of a hammer on an anvil at a smithy, and could catch a whiff of the smell of bread and other cooked foods. Children ran around without a care in the world. I spied smiles all around, domestic bliss on the townspeople's faces. Folks waved at us as we passed, and we returned their smiles with our own. I've been through dozens of towns like this one, but it never grew monotonous or annoying. The joy these people had was just what I'd come to expect out in the wilds. They had their problems, certainly, but they didn't let that get them down. I didn't catch a glimpse of Maelor, but we didn't go that deep into the town. There was an inn on the main road at the entrance to the town with the same stone foundation and wooden supports as the rest of the buildings, its walls stuck up. It was called the Tall Pint. A pint sounded great right about then, but we had things to do first. My friend and I hitched our horses to the post out front and made our way in. It was a quick stop. I just wanted to see if the innkeeper could tell us where Maelor was. But as we entered, the aroma of meat cooking in the kitchen wafted into my nostrils and made my stomach rumble. But I wanted to find Maelor first. We could eat after, despite how much I wanted to right now. There was only one guest in the common room who sat at a long table with a bowl of soup and a book in his hand, so I paid him no mind. One of the workers swept nearby. He was a few years older than me, with short sandy hair and a round face. He whistled a familiar tune, though I couldn't place the title. It was a popular song amongst traveling bards, but the title escaped me. That didn't matter right now, though. I walked up to him. "Excuse me," I said to him. His deep brown eyes snapped to mine, and he offered a shy smile. He cleared his throat.
"Ah, hello there, traveler. What can we do for you here?"
He leaned his broom against one of the columns that held up the room.
"Need a room or some food or both?"
He was very eager. I shook my head. "No, thank you. Perhaps later, but for now, I'm looking for someone." The man nodded.
"A local?"
"Not exactly, though I know he's been here recently," I explained. "Do you know where I can find Maelor Corusso? Old crotchety man, large, and has a long gray beard. He's a summoner." The innkeeper, which I assumed he was, nodded as his eyes lit up in recognition.
"Oh, yes! He stays here. A decent fellow, rather ornery, but very helpful. He doesn't know when to stop working."
I chuckled. "That sounds like him. Is he still in town?"
"Indeed he is. He's been helping to dig a coal mine about a mile into the forest. Still in the very early stages, so he should be here a while longer."
I smiled and tipped him for the information. "I appreciate it." As we made to go, the innkeeper called after me.
"Take the main road out of town. Then half a mile in, take the freshly cut path south into the forest. You can't miss it. Thank you,"
Layla said with that cheery lilt of hers. Then we exited the town and mounted our horses. We traveled down the road out of town quickly. I set us on a fast pace since I was so excited. My friends didn't protest. They smiled eagerly as well. The fork in the road to the dig site came up soon enough, as obvious as the innkeeper had said. A thin dirt path, clear of bushes and smaller trees, freshly made, judging by the debris of cleared bushes and trees along the side of it. The path was narrow, so we rode in slowly, single file.
"How do you think Milo will react when he sees you?"
Brayden asked from the rear of the line. I stroked my chin as we idled up the trail.
"Good question.
He'll scold me for something or another, say some crazy shit, but ultimately give me a hug and a big smile." Layla snickered.
"I can't wait."
As we went along, silence fell over us as we let the sounds of nature wash over us. Birds chirped. The wind rustled the leaves in the trees, and cicadas droned their loud songs in the midday heat. That was all interrupted by nearby yelling. The path ahead ended at an opening between two hills. I reined in my horse.
"You hear that?"
I asked. My friends nodded, their faces fraught with sudden concern. I dismounted Cass and padded toward the opening.
"Where are you going?"
Layla hissed. "I have a bad feeling about this," I told her. She cursed, hesitated, and finally dismounted her horse to follow me. Brayden did as well. Good. I continued forward, the yelling growing louder. I couldn't make out the words, but it sounded very aggressive. I hoped it was simply Maelor arguing with some workers. But those hopes evaporated when a gunshot ripped through the serene forest air.
"Fuck,"
I said as I dropped to an instinctive crouch. Going straight in probably wasn't a good idea, so I veered into the woods and crept amongst the brush. My friends didn't argue. I began to climb the rise ahead of us. We were shrouded by the deep shade of the forest, caressed by this particularly dense cluster of trees. That only helped our stealthy approach. Nearing the top, I grew more nervous. I gripped one of my essence crystals subconsciously. The yelling got closer and closer as we crested the hill. I heard Layla gulp next to me. The shouting was definitely angry, and there were a few curses. Maelor's voice was clear as day, arguing with whoever was down there.
"I won't do it. You'll have to kill me," he said with defiance.
Shit, this was serious. Hell no, I didn't come all this way to see him only for him to get his fat old butt killed right in front of me. I gritted my teeth and jogged to the top of the hill. Stealth be damned. I crouched in a bush at the top between two adolescent pines. The rise I sat on was only a sliver that ended almost immediately and sloped down into a wide bowl of a clearing before me. A gully, really. Trees were cleared all around, with large piles of lumber to our left, with stumps that littered the area. At the very center was a massive, rocky outcropping, surrounded by a dug-up pit, as wide as the inn we'd been in earlier. The top of the rock was worn gray and covered in moss. Halfway down, the rock became brown and muddy from where Maelor had started digging, and there were piles of dirt everywhere. Standing amidst all of this was my only family, Maelor, and a gaggle of armed men.
"I'd rather not kill a defenseless old man," a thug immediately in front of Maelor said. "Especially one that can be very useful to us."
I couldn't make out his finer features from a distance, especially with a brown scarf over his mouth, the same as the rest of the men. He was tall, with a narrow head and short-cropped black hair, his skin pale in comparison. Judging from the ragged leather armor and the patchwork clothes of all these men, I knew they were bandits. There were 13 of them, 9 of them armed with rifles and pistols, and the other 4 had swords. They had Maelor surrounded. My mentor stood defiantly in the middle of them, blood running down his face from a cut on his forehead, as the blood stained his gray beard red. Maelor scoffed.
"I'm not as defenseless as I look."
The leader, I assumed, spoke again, accompanied by a snicker.
"I'm sure. That's why I said you're useful, but frankly, if you try to grab your crystals, I'll put a bullet in your leg."
He kicked a familiar-looking satchel next to his feet. I grimaced. Like hell I would let that happen. Maelor simply responded to that threat with a laugh.
"How am I supposed to help you without my monsters?"
One of the other bandits, a short dark-skinned one, chimed in.
"He's got a point, sir."
"Silence!" he snapped.
He turned his attention back to Maelor.
"You will help us, or we shall raid that precious little village you've been staying in."
"Please, you shit," Maelor scoffed. "You lot are planning on attacking them regardless of what I do."
The leader laughed harshly.
"You're right."
He jammed the barrel of his rifle into Maelor's gut hard. My mentor crumbled to his knees and clutched at his stomach with a groan.
"Fine. Have it your way," the leader sneered.
"Fuck," I whispered.
"This is bad," Brayden said next to me.
"Yeah,"
Layla added, her voice trembling. I didn't register what either of them said. All I could see was the bandit leader as he cocked the hammer back of his rifle and put it against Maelor's temple. This was it. This was what I came all this way to see. I would watch the only family I had left die in front of me.
"Cover me!"
I moved before they could respond. Brayden and Layla each tried to grab me and stop me, but I was too quick. I grabbed as many crystals as I could hold in my grip and tossed them as I charged down the hill. The crystals landed at the feet of the various bandits and flashed. Then chaos ensued. The monsters suddenly appeared and attacked, though I ordered them not to kill the bandits. That wasn't who I was. So my axe goblins and box trolls and wallardons used their bodies and not their claws and blades. Admittedly, I knew they were capable of killing without their weaponized appendages, but it was less likely. My box trolls tackled a couple of bandits, while one of my axe goblins headbutted another. Another goblin suddenly exploded in a flash of smoke after 3 bandits shot at it simultaneously. Bullets could kill monsters, but it was exceedingly hard, and bullets were worthless against the bigger, powerful, more magical grade E monsters. The leader's head snapped to the commotion as he whirled around and raised his rifle. I summoned a speed slug, placed it on my shoulder, and shot toward the bandit leader. His eyes met mine for a split second before I kicked him in the stomach with the force of a bullet and sent him flying into the rock. He smashed against it with a yelp and crumbled to the loose dirt. Rifles cracked, and puffs of smoke billowed as the bandits continued to fire on my monsters. But their scattered single shots weren't having that much of an effect on them. They were smart, though. It was unwise of them to try to kill my monsters, so they raised their weapons to me. I only had a split second before they fired, but it was enough for me to summon a Wallerdin in front of me as their guns fired in rapid succession. Their bullets bounced harmlessly off the Wallerdin's broad bulk. I summoned another one to stand guard around me and added a few more goblins to the fray for good measure. Behind me, a bandit ran for Maelor, but I barreled into him at slug-powered speed, grabbed him by the arm, and tossed him onto the ground. He passed out from the impact.
"Griff,"
the shaky voice of Maelor asked behind me. I turned to him and flashed him a grin. "Hey, old man." I gave him a courageous grin. He frowned.
"What the hell are you doing here?"
I hooked a hand under his arm and hauled him to his feet. "We can talk later. Let's get you out of here first. How did they even get close to you?" He shook his head.
"They caught me by surprise. Had their guns on me for... I could do a damn thing. Took my satchel of crystals."
I nodded to him as my eyes drifted to the tree-covered slope I left my friends on. But Brayden was already in the dig site, his own crystals in hand. He threw a couple, and out came a pair of ice imps, who proceeded to cast ice magic at the bandits. Layla was still hidden, and when I glanced in her direction, I saw the glint of her essence crystals. No doubt she was waiting to see if we got ambushed. That's when another rifle sounded, but this one was a boom that broke the air and made my bones vibrate. That could only mean one thing, that they must have had a marksman or two with long rifles. Layla ducked back into cover as one of my monsters disappeared in a puff of smoke from the shot. Another boom, another bullet, and my Wallerdin was destroyed. I cursed. Those bullets were a higher caliber and more effective against grunt-level monsters. Still, they should have been useless against my Wallerdins, so they must have been a damned good shot and hit it right in the eye, the weakest part of it. That was just my luck. I grabbed for more crystals from my bandolier as the last of my monsters fell under a hail of rifle fire. But before I could summon them, another shot rang out. The earth exploded in front of my feet, kicking up a blast of dirt. The message was clear. Move, and I die. I followed the line of fire up to a pair of bandits on the slopes ahead of us, each garbed in deep brown cloaks and hoods to keep themselves hidden. They both had long rifles, the thin metal barrels as long as my leg, and scopes that glinted in the sunlight.
"Make one wrong move, and I'll put a hole the size of an apple in your face,"
one of the bandits called out. I sneered at the bandit, but I still had the speed slug. They wouldn't be able to hit me, no matter how skilled they were. The other one raised his rifle, but he pointed it at Maelor.
"Just in case you think that magical speed of yours will protect you, it won't protect the old man."
Fuck. He was right. I was fast enough to evade their attack, but Maelor certainly wasn't, and I wouldn't be either if I tried to protect him. These damn bandits! Still, I had one ace up my sleeve. Layla. I just had to wait for her to do her thing. The bandit leader staggered to his feet. He groaned and checked the back of his head, wincing as he did so. His hand came back smeared with blood.
"Son of a bitch!"
he growled. He charged over to me and kicked the back of my knees, forcing me to the ground. The four or five other bandits that weren't knocked out snickered as they kept their guns trained on Maelor and me. Two of them had their guns trained on Brayden, who had his hands raised. They didn't appear to know where Layla was, if they even had noticed her moments earlier. The bandit leader forced Maelor to his knees as well. Once we were both kneeling, he pulled out a long knife and held it to my throat.
"I don't know who the fuck you are, but you made a big mistake interfering."
Now that I was up close, I could see him clearly. Long nose, thin lips, narrow blue eyes, sharp cheeks, and he looked like a mean son of a bitch. My eyes flitted to the tree line, where Brayden watched in horror. I knew Layla was probably watching too. I feigned worry and fear for the sake of the bandits. If I acted too cocksure about Layla's impending rescue, I would doom us all. So instead, I played up my fear just a little. Maelor struggled next to me.
Leave him be, he pleaded. I'll do anything you ask. Just don't kill him.
The leader chuckled.
I'm afraid we're past that. We'll find another summoner for our needs. I can't let stunts like this stand.
I saw Brayden take a step toward me, but one of the bandits shot his gun into the air, making us all flinch.
I don't think so, you axe. Stay over there and I won't have to put you down too.
A lie, I was sure. I didn't believe for a second that they wouldn't kill Brayden, but Brayden reluctantly stayed still. His body tensed, itching to move, but he stayed glued in place. Maelor roared, but another bandit held him in place. I gave him a weathered smile. It'll be okay.
Like hell it will!
I wanted to argue with him, to tell him my friend was still up there and would help, but I couldn't. Instead, I had to bear it as the bandit leader glared and pressed the knife harder to my neck, lancing me with pain and drawing blood.
Say your prayers, boy!
A familiar flash blasted the area, with a puff of smoke accompanying it. A monster being summoned. A Wallerdin suddenly appeared above the bandit marksman. They only had enough time to look up at it before gravity kicked in and crushed them. Bones snapped and blood sprayed, and it sounded just plain wrong.
What the?
The leader looked on in horror, and that was all the opening I needed. I pushed the bandit leader away from me, his knife coming free from my throat, though it nicked me good one last time as he stumbled away. I turned and saw Layla at a full sprint, her face contorted and red with fury. Layla growled as she tossed another crystal, one that I recognized. It was large and swirled with dark blue light. I knew what laid within. When the monster materialized, I grinned from ear to ear. Her hippocrans had joined the fight. The massive beast roared, a terrifying sound that reverberated through the forest and sent birds fleeing into the skies for miles around. The bandits didn't even think about trying to fight. The three remaining scum turned tail and made for the trees. I turned my attention back on the leader, but he was already on his feet and sprinting for the woods too. I noticed he had Maelor's satchel of crystals slung over his hip and guessed he must have grabbed it in the initial chaos. There was no way we could let him escape. I started after him right as Layla came within a few steps of me, already tired from using her monsters in the run.
Wait, Griff!
I didn't look back at her.
Look after Maelor!
But just do it!
Then I was off. The leader and the other bandits were already in the trees as I began to climb up the hill. I would have used my speed slug, but I learned long ago that going full speed inside of a forest was not a good idea. That lesson had resulted in one of many broken noses and a chipped tooth, so it was up to my normal long legs. The bandits were fast, and they probably knew these woods. I certainly didn't know them. I was at a disadvantage, especially since there were four of them. One broke off to the left and hopped over a log before twisting between two trees and taking off at a sprint. I chucked a cement troll crystal his way and had it pin his right arm to a tree. That one was down, but the other three were now farther ahead. Another was far ahead to my right. He was going to get away, but then a massive body slammed into him. Brayden. He had the bandit knocked out in a heartbeat. There was that academy training coming to fruition. He raced to my side and then joined me stride for stride in my pursuit.
What are you doing?
I roared through labored pants.
Is that obvious?
He replied with a quirky eyebrow. He pointed ahead of us at the bandits. I grimaced.
I told you to watch after Maelor!
He frowned.
You asked Layla, and she has her hippocranes. It seemed to me that you needed help.
I couldn't deny that logic. I did need the help, too. The bandit leader and his last crony twisted between trees and over obstacles and moved with a grace and desperation that I hadn't expected. They'd clearly done this before, and though I was a wilder through and through, it wasn't as if I sprinted wildly through the forest at every chance I could. I tried using a couple of cement trolls, but neither was able to hit the bandits with their cement. The globs of their sticky secretions would either hit a tree or bush, or the bandits would dodge out of the way at the last possible second. I had to give them credit. I wish they wouldn't be so difficult. Then again, I wish they hadn't attacked Maelor to begin with. They started to pull away. Brayden, who trailed slightly behind me, cursed.
We're losing them, Griff.
Thanks, I hadn't noticed.
He probably could have done without the sarcasm, but I was frustrated. I began to curse my luck and my tired legs when our luck took a dramatic turn for the better. Ahead of the bandits, there was the sudden flash and smoke of a summoned monster, but what appeared was nothing I'd ever seen before. The monster looked like a basilisk, a massive snake, but it glowed a brilliant white with glistening scales and magnificent white wings. It had little segmented legs that jutted out of its body along its sides. Its head was a lot flatter and wider than most snakes, similar to a hippocrene's head, and it was eyeless. Was this one of Brayden's monsters? He'd certainly never mentioned anything like this. No, it couldn't be. I would have seen his arm move, would have seen the crystal fly over my head, and strong as he was, I doubted he could throw it so far and so accurately. The bandit leader and his man skidded to a halt and looked up at the creature, mystified. As the monster began to curl in on itself, Brayden cursed and tackled me to the ground.
Don't look!
He whispered harshly. So I didn't. An instant later, everything went white, despite my closed eyes. Silence followed for several long seconds before we risked opening our eyes. I stood shakily and helped Brayden to his feet. The monster was gone, and the bandits were completely still and ringed by a faint white glow. The leader had a long look of horror stuck on his face. He didn't blink or breathe, but when I put a finger to his neck, which was hot now, I felt a pulse. I knew what this was. They were paralyzed. Someone suddenly scampered through the underbrush to our left. I grabbed my crystals and stood at the ready, but there was no need. A woman appeared. She had a nest of busy black hair that tumbled over her shoulders in waves of curls. She had rich chocolate skin, a trait of the West. A thick bandolier ran across her torso, filled with crystals like mine. Her full lips curled to reveal a brilliant smile. She winked and took a few deep breaths.
Well, that was something, wasn't it?
I blinked, astonished. Yes. Yes, it was.
Chapter 17.
I wriggled out from beneath Brayden's grip and pushed myself to my feet. I held my hand to my throat and staunched the trickle of blood that still dripped from the cut from the bandit leader's blade. The woman came to a halt in front of me, her hands folded behind her back, and her head tilted slightly to the side as she took me in with a smile. Her eyes were deep pools of dark brown, her cheeks soft and round. She was about a half a head shorter than me, but her big pile of hair made her seem taller than she actually was.
"Like what you see?"
she asked, an eyebrow arched.
"Uh-huh."
Her grin grew wider as she slapped my arm.
"I'm just teasing."
"Get it together, Griff. I'd have time to get to know our mysterious rescuer." I scratched the back of my head and offered a slight, awkward smile. "Thanks for the assist." She crossed her arms.
"You're very welcome."
Her eyes and smile were warm, inviting, and gave me a feeling like I could get lost in them forever. With a shake of my head, I pulled out of the gravity of those eyes. While I had some questions for her, and what that monster had been, we needed to get back to Maelor and Layla, and round up the bandits so that the authorities could handle them properly. The rest could wait.
"Well, I guess we should collect these miscreants,"
Brayden said with a crack of his knuckles. Look at him, taking charge. He fished a couple of crystals from the small pack at his hip and tossed them. They flashed, illuminating the area briefly in their faint ghostly glow. And out of the puff of dirty smoke that followed, stood a couple of box trolls. They each collected one of the petrified bandits.
"You're a summoner too, eh?"
the woman asked with a bemused smirk. I nodded. "We both are." Her narrowed eyes scanned me up and down as she stroked her chin.
"Really now? Interesting," she trailed off.
A flicker of recognition crossed her face, as if she couldn't quite place where she knew me from. How that was possible, I didn't know, as I certainly didn't know her. I gave her a wave. "I'm Griff. This is Brayden." Brayden waved as well. She smiled.
"Syra, nice to meet you."
"Likewise." I led us back to the dig site. The woman, right on our tail,
and the box trolls right behind her. We collected the bandit that Brayden had knocked out first, slung him over the shoulder of one of the trolls, and then found the one that I'd trapped with my cement troll. He was still conscious as he tried desperately to wriggle free of the cement, even though it was a hopeless endeavor. Brayden walked right up to him.
"Sorry about this," he said shyly,
and then reared back and punched the bandit square in the jaw. The bandit's head whipped back before lolling forward. His head bowed low, and his eyes rolled back in his head. We collected him, and then moments later broke through the tree line to the dig site. Maelor sat on his haunches and twiddled his thumbs as Layla knelt in front of him and examined him. She dabbed at his head with some fabric. She said something to him, and he laughed in response, but I couldn't make out any of their words. Still, it was obvious that they were getting along well, which was just fine by me. I could hear him take sharp and wheezing breaths, the pain in him obvious. I jogged down the hill to them. When Layla saw me, she dropped the makeshift bandage and ran to me. She tackled me in a warm embrace and laughed.
"Thank goodness," she exclaimed before pulling away quickly. "I was getting worried for a second."
I winked. "Don't worry, it takes a lot to beat Brayden and me. You should know that." She replied with a grin and a roll of her eyes. We got all the bandits. I pointed a thumb behind me at the prisoners, carried by Brayden and the box trolls. She followed my gesture and smiled.
"I can see that."
But her smile faded a touch, and her eyebrow lifted at the sight of Syra.
"Who's that?"
"That's Syra. She's a summoner who helped us catch a few of the bandits." I turned away from her and toward Maelor, who took deep breaths. I hooked an arm under his and helped him to his feet, and he groaned and cursed all the way.
"I'm too old for this shit," he said with a grimace.
I smiled. "Were you ever young enough for this, old man?" He was old, but he wasn't slow, so I wasn't able to dodge his hand when he swatted at the back of my head.
"Don't get cheeky."
I smiled and rubbed the back of my head. His eyes went to Layla.
"You've got an interesting companion here, this Layla."
She smiled mischievously, and I could only laugh as I said, "Yeah, interesting would be a good word to describe her, definitely." My smile faded as I took in my mentor's appearance fully. The whole right side of his head was coated in blood. Some of it was smeared and wiped away, a result of Layla's prodding, I assumed. Still, there was so much that it made me worried. I put a hand on his shoulder and frowned at the wound. "You okay?" I asked as I began to examine the injury. He slapped my hand aside.
"I'm fine, Griff."
I ignored him as I turned his head and saw the gash that ran from above his right ear and along his forehead. It looked like it stopped bleeding, as the blood was already starting to cake against his skin. I didn't think it would need stitches, but I was certainly no expert on healing. After it healed, he would have a scar to go with the one that ran along the left side of his jaw.
"I staunched the bleeding,"
Layla said with a cheeky smile, clearly proud of herself.
"Might need stitches. I don't know."
"See?" Maelor said with a huff. "I'm fine."
"Thank the maker," I snarked. "It would have been annoying to have to come all the way out here just for you to die on me." He swatted at me again, but I anticipated this one, and ducked it with a chuckle.
"Yeah, it would be so inconvenient for you,"
he shot back. I laughed and pulled him into a hug. He squeezed back, and then we were both laughing wholeheartedly. We pulled apart then. I put my hands on my hips and gave him a good look over. I didn't see any other injuries from what I could tell. "Do you have a first aid kit, Maelor?" I asked. He shook his head.
"Forgot it back at the inn. The one day I needed it, too."
"It's okay," I began. "We should at least wrap this up for the time being, until we can get you back to town to get looked at." He didn't protest as I tore a length of my traveling cloak off and wrapped it gently around his head. Someone cleared their throat behind me. Syra. I turned and found her waiting there expectantly. I put a shoulder around Maelor and smiled at her. "Hello again." She smirked and offered a slight wave of her hand.
"Hi."
She gave me a long look.
"So you're the Griff, eh? I've heard so much about you."
I frowned in vague confusion.
"Have you now?"
I moved away from Maelor and took a step toward her so that we were only an arm's width apart. "And who are you, if you don't mind my asking? I mean, I know your name, but how do you know me?" She put her hands on her hips and grinned.
Well, I'm the old man's new helper, of course.
You replaced me that quickly? I asked with a frown, and turned toward me.